The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
What's up, everybody? This is Andy Sukov on his debut episode of Sports Talk 1240, Hour 2, on this Sunday, December 4th, 2016. Brian Gray is back there behind the glass, giving us our good engineering tonight. And really, if you're a Giants fan today, you don't know what happened. You're sitting there watching TV and watching Eli Manning out on the field and watching the offense go and saying, this team won 6 straight games? This team that's playing the Pittsburgh Steelers tonight, they were flying high and they played like that. But then you take a second, you go back and see who they beat in those 6 straight games. They beat the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens are 7-5 now, but when the Giants played them, they didn't have an identity yet. They went and beat the LA Rams, who, now that Eric Dickerson is not on the sidelines, maybe Jeff Fisher might want to go back and ask him if he wants to play, because the Rams are just, they're a mess. The Philadelphia Eagles, who after Carson Wentz started 3-0, they've been an unmitigated disaster. The Cincinnati Bengals, who are horrendous. The Chicago Bears, who they're just waiting for the axe to fall on Jay Cutler and just get rid of that contract and not have to deal with that anymore. And the Cleveland Browns, who, let's be honest, they did hold the Giants in check for 3 quarters before the Cleveland Browns showed up and the Giants were able to convert on that. So the Giants going to Pittsburgh today, have to face a good Steeler team that's been playing much better. They're getting healthy, and they're facing future Hall of Famer Ben Roethlisberger. And you know that that defense is going to have a very tough time against a red-hot Roethlisberger with arguably the best running back in the NFL right now, Le'Veon Bell, who can not only run the ball from behind the line of scrimmage, they can line him up as a wide receiver, and he's going to torch you like that. As many are saying, he could be a Pro Bowl wide receiver himself if he wasn't playing a running back. And on top of that, you have to deal with Antonio Brown, who is one of the best wide receivers in the game with Odell Beckham Jr. for the Giants. So you have two of the best wide receivers going up against each other in what could have been a colossal battle, and the Steelers won out. Things started pretty inauspiciously for the Giants, to say the least. They gave up a field goal and got the ball back. A couple bad penalties, including what I believe was a soft holding call on Eric Flowers in the end zone, which led to a safety and a 5-0 lead for the Steelers. And you knew things weren't, you weren't sure how things were going to go from there. Like, how are the Giants going to respond? They simply respond by going all the way down the field, getting 62 yards. They're at the Steeler 12-yard line. Eli drops back. He's got Larry Donnell in the end zone. He throws it. And who catches it but Lawrence Timmons? A perfect hook zone pattern, waiting for Eli Manning to throw that ball to Larry Donnell. And not only getting the interception, but to add insult to the Giants' injury, he takes it back 60 yards. Not a great start in the first quarter and the first half for the New York Giants. So you're now sitting there thinking, as a Giants fan, they gotta respond on defense. They gotta step it up and force them into another field goal. Let it be only 8-0. And at first you thought they might have done that. But then Ben Roethlisberger rolls out of the pocket. Rolls towards the sideline. Think maybe he's going to take off and run. And he finds Antonio Brown in the back of the end zone with Janoris Jenkins right on top of him. And that, there's nothing that he could have done on that play. You're sitting there saying, like, Antonio Brown made that play. He threw that where only Antonio Brown could get that ball, and even though he was draped in coverage, he hung on to that ball, fell down, kept the feet in bounds, got the elbow down before falling out of bounds. So they're up 11-0, and they decide to go for 2. And you wonder if Mike Tomlin learned anything from that game against Dallas, where they missed on every 2-point conversion they took that game. Apparently they didn't learn anything, because they went for the play off the sideline for Antonio Brown and they missed. Oh, it's 11-0. And now you know the Giants have to respond. And they can't. They stall, can't move the ball downfield, and they go into the half down 14-0. You're looking at a team that was taking a lot of penalties at inopportune times, especially on the offensive line. Ereck Flowers taking penalties. You're looking at Marshall Newhouse, and there's not a lot of flow on that offensive line because they've been dealing with all the injuries that they have been, with injuries to Justin Pugh, Adam Gaddis, who weren't able to play in today's game. And when that's not working, Eli Manning is going to have to adjust to that. And he did what he could, but it just wasn't enough. They get the ball to start the second half. They drive down the field. It's fourth and goal from the 3-yard line. And you're thinking, okay, they should get this. Paul Perkins going out in the flat. He's wide open. And if you're watching on TV, you see that and you're yelling at Eli, throw the ball to Perkins! Throw the ball to Perkins! He would have walked in for a touchdown. He decides to go through the middle of the field to Will Tye, and Ryan Shazier sitting right there on top of him, knocks the ball out of Ty's hands. And yes, that ball should have been caught. Without a doubt, it should have been caught. But didn't happen in that way. And you, at that point, you knew the Giants were in for a long, long day. They finally did get on the board. They figured out how to run the ball with Rashad Jennings today. And he had a pretty good game. And I will attest to that because my fantasy team was quite pleased to have him on the roster today with what he did, including getting that screen with the touch, that he took it in for a touchdown on the fake handoff to Jennings and the fake to Beckham, and getting the play into the end zone. So while he only had a couple yards rushing, but he only had 19 yards rushing on 6 carries. So he only carried the ball 6 times for an average of 3 yards a carry. They had 6 catches for 34 yards and a touchdown. So now looking ahead, the Giants are playing the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys, nobody can beat them right now. The Vikings should have beaten them. Didn't work out that way. The Cowboys are the hottest team in football. The Giants needed to win today to make that game all the more important for both teams, because that was going to be a huge test for the Dallas Cowboys to go on the road at MetLife Stadium and take on what would have been a 7-game winning streak Giant team. Now, the Giants have taken all of the drama out of that game, because there is now no way for anybody to catch the Dallas Cowboys. The Giants aren't going to do it. The Redskins aren't going to do it. And the Philadelphia Eagles are most certainly not going to do it. Looking down at some of the stats here for today's game, 6 Giants had receptions. 7 were targeted. And you look at those names. Odell Beckham, 10 catches for 100 yards. Sterling Shepard had a touchdown. Even Jarrell Adams made a catch. And for those wondering who Jarrell Adams is, he's one of those guys who's way down on the depth chart that you always forget about, but he does have those moments where he's helpful to the team. Rashad Jennings had 6 catches for 34 yards. Will Tye was 2 for 22. Even Roger Lewis had a catch. You see where I'm going with this? Not one of those names is Victor Cruz. And Victor Cruz is one of those guys you need to get involved in a game, especially a game where you're facing a good front 7 that you can try to exploit the secondary with a guy like Cruz. And you didn't hear his name called once. And that's not good. You may hear about how things aren't working well for him, that he's not getting involved in the game, and that might be a point of frustration for him, and that's not where you want to be when you're at a team that's sitting at 8-4. You don't want that. You want this team flowing well and making moves. By not getting Victor Cruz involved and hearing his displeasure about it, you might have some problems moving on. We saw it earlier with Odell Beckham when, in the beginning of the season, he was complaining about not getting the ball. And what did Eli Manning do? Started getting him the ball. And he's happy. It's kind of like when Keyshawn Johnson was playing for the Jets back in the 90s. And everybody knows that famous phrase, just get me the damn ball. And you have to wonder, is Victor Cruz thinking the same thing? Just get me the ball. I can make plays happen. And we've seen it. We've seen him make plays happen. Coming off a knee injury, yes, it's gonna take some time for him to regain that rapport, but we're now 13 weeks into the season. How is that not happening yet? Looking at the other side of the ball, the defense. The defense has actually been pretty solid this year. It's been pretty much bend but don't break. But today, they could not stop a third down to save their lives. When you have a third and 17 with less than 2 minutes to go in the first half and you're down 11-0, you need to keep Pittsburgh out of scoring range. It's third and 17. You think you did your job. Then Ben Roethlisberger finds Eli Rogers for an 18-yard catch. He had only gotten 10 yards on the original catch. He had to run the extra 18 yards and was pushed over the first down marker. How do you let that happen in the middle of the field to let a wide receiver whose name is not Antonio Brown get 18 yards when it's third and 17 is unacceptable? And you could tell me, that the main guys in the secondary aren't there, like Nat Burry, and nah. That doesn't matter. It's third and 17. You play to the sticks. You make sure that he does not get there. Because they were out of field goal range. That 18-yard play got him right back in. And sure enough, Randy Bullock kicks the field goal. It's now 14-0 at halftime. And it was 14-0 at halftime with the Steelers scoring only one touchdown. They were able to convert on plays the Giants should not have allowed to happen at all. And take on top of that, their defense had to come on early a few times because of Eli Manning turnovers. The interception in the red zone, which then, like I mentioned earlier, Lawrence Timmons took back 60 yards. Driving in the third quarter, it was an underthrown pass for Sterling Shepard. Had Steelers safety sitting right there waiting for the ball. That he could have been camping under there like a center fielder waiting for it. And that's essentially what he did. So you're looking at this Giants team and you're wondering what are they? And they're a good team, but they're not going to blow anybody out, which we saw in that 6-game winning streak, they didn't. But are they ready for the big test today? And the answer is no. They weren't. And it doesn't get any easier for the Giants now. They have Dallas, Detroit, who's leading their division, and won again today against the New Orleans Saints. We'll get into that in a little while. And then two division games to round out the season. Philadelphia and Washington, who you know are going to, and especially Washington, who might still be in the playoff hunt at that point, but you know that those two teams are going to want nothing more than to take out the New York Giants, because they know they're not catching Dallas. But if they can stop one of their own division rivals from making the playoffs, you know they will savor that moment. But the Giants still have to forget about today. Today was not a good day for them. Move on to Dallas. Because Dallas is going to, that's going to be their biggest test of the year after today. Because today was, they were facing a good Steeler team that were fighting to stay in the AFC North race, which has now come down to just between them and Baltimore, because the Bengals are a disaster and the Cleveland Browns are winless. So, you know, you just go with that. They're not going anywhere. And unfortunately for them and their fans, won't be going anywhere for quite a while. Looking at some other scores around the league, you had a few teams that just absolutely throttled their competition. The New England Patriots improved to 10-2 with a big win over the LA Rams. The Baltimore Ravens went to 7-5 with a 38-6 win over the Miami Dolphins. And I know there are some people listening out there that were, and probably took the Miami Dolphins in their pools, myself included, thinking, okay, the Dolphins are on a 6-game win streak. This is going to be a good idea, right? Nope. They were taken out by Joe Flacco, who threw for 381 yards and 4 touchdowns on just really a phenomenal day passing. He had a QBR of 94.3 and a quarterback rating of 119.2. He was 36 of 47 passing for those 381 yards, averaging 8 yards a throw. And it got to the point where Ryan Mallett came in, and Ryan Mallett hasn't been good since he played at Arkansas. But when you're up 38-6, yeah, you can let him play. The Dolphins gave up 110 yards rushing, including 56 to Kenneth Dixon and 50 to Terrence West. But you look at some of these guys who, look at some of these receiving numbers. Dennis Pitta, 9 catches for 90 yards, and here's a good stat, 2 touchdowns. I was reading on Twitter today from Mike Garofalo that he spoke to Dennis Pitta and said that I'm feeling ready. I don't want to feel like I'm sitting here and can't contribute. He hadn't scored a touchdown since 2013. Well, you could blow that streak out of the water because he had 2 today. Rashad Perriman with 2 catches for 59 yards and a touchdown, including a 53-yard catch. Yeah, Terrence West had a not only a rushing touchdown, had a receiving touchdown, but the Baltimore Ravens had at least 8 players with catches today and 10 with targets. So you're looking at a team that really knows how to rock the ball around, and now at 7-5, they are a very dangerous team heading into the latter part of the season. They have a date with that Pittsburgh Steelers team that the Giants could not beat today in Week 16, and that game will probably determine the division. You had another big game with the Oakland Raiders improving to 10-2 with a 38-24 win over Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills, who were looking to try to stay alive in the playoff race to get that last wild card spot. Bills came out. They had a lead early on, and they didn't even have that bad a game. LeSean McCoy was 17 carries for 130 yards. Mike Gillisley had 2 touchdowns on 8 carries. Tyrod Taylor had a rushing touchdown. But the passing just wasn't there. They had only 191 yards passing, no touchdowns, 1 interception against a very tough Raider defense. And Derek Carr coming off a dislocated finger in last week's game against Carolina, went 19 of 35 for 260 yards and 2 touchdowns with a quarterback rating of 97.3. Latavius Murray with 20 carries for 82 yards and 2 touchdowns. So if you had him on your fantasy team, you're happy. Because that's some good points. Michael Crabtree had a touchdown on 74 yards receiving on 7 catches. Amari Cooper had a touchdown with 59 yards receiving. So you're looking at a Raider team that is just continuing to roll, and they're beating everybody no matter what coast they're playing on, no matter what time they're playing in. They're just continuing to roll and make good. The Chicago Bears, who, even though they're waiting for the axe to fall on Jay Cutler, who is now out for the year, so they're glad that's over with. They just throttled the San Francisco 49ers, who have lost 11 straight games. They are 1-11. They won opening night on Monday Night Football this year, and then have not won since. Chip Kelly is just a leaderless ship right now. That Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick threw for a combined 39 passing yards. Colin Kaepernick threw only 5 passes for 4 yards. Blaine Gabbert had 35 yards on 10 attempts. Carlos Hyde had a decent game with 20 carries for 92 yards, but when you can't get anything going offensively and you're playing a crummy Bears team, you know you're bad. You lost to Matt Barkley. The same Matt Barkley who couldn't cut it with the Eagles, did not do well in his last year with USC, and you never knew what was going to happen with him. And I even heard today somebody called him a great quarterback. And while I had to go back and play that back in my head for a second, wondering, I don't know what this guy's on, but he might want to stop. Because Matt Barkley is a terrible quarterback. And he's lucky that Jordan Howard was there to save him with those 3 touchdowns and 117 yards. That even though he averaged only 3.7 yards a carry, those touchdowns were huge. You can't make it up that the Bears, without Jay Cutler, he still gives them the best chance to win, no matter what you think about him, no matter how many bad interceptions he throws, and how often he gets hurt. He's still better than Matt Barkley. but that team is in desperate need of a rebuild, and they will probably be coming up on that very soon. Other big games, the Tampa Bay Bucks. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers in leading Jameis Winston, the number one pick in a couple years ago. He's now led this team to 7-5, and they are tied in the division in the AFC South. Winston went 20 of 30 for 280 yards and a touchdown. Doug Martin had a touchdown rushing the ball. So this team is on the rise. And with the Atlanta Falcons losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, yeah, but those two teams are both at 7-5, firmly in control of the NFC South. And you have the Panthers and Saints looking up at them. Right now we're in the second quarter on Sunday Night Football in Seattle with the Seahawks leading the Panthers 10-0 and the Seahawks driving with the ball. So far, you have Cam Newton is 3 of 6 for 24 yards. Derek Anderson has come into the game and one pass through an interception. So not really a good start for Carolina. Scoring, Stephen Hauschka hit a 23-yard field goal, and then Thomas Rawls with an 8-yard touchdown run midway through the first quarter. So there's your 10-0 score. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other games and Monday Night Football, where the New York Jets take on the Indianapolis Colts. And, oh boy, I hope you're ready for that one. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, Hour 2. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Sports Talk 1240 Hour 2. I'm Andy Sukhoff, and before we went to the break, we were previewing the New York Jets against the Indianapolis Colts tomorrow night. And you know that the ESPN execs and Sean McDonough and John Gruden are all saying, thank God that Andrew Luck is playing, otherwise nobody would watch this game. Andrew Luck, obviously, last week not playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Scott Tolzien had to play against him, and that was arguably one of the worst games of the year, where the Pittsburgh Steelers coasted to a very easy win against a rudderless Colts team. Andrew Luck is now back after completing concussion protocol and will be facing a New York Jets team that has routinely gotten torched by quarterback after quarterback, and they didn't even have to be named Luck. Their secondary is one of the worst in football, and when they came into this season, expectations were sky high for the New York Jets. And things just spiraled out of control right from the get-go when they lost that game against Cincinnati, where even with 7 sacks, they couldn't beat that Bengal team. You had the blocked extra point, the missed field goals, which was kind of set the tone for the entire season, where it was just going to be missed opportunities left and right. And you thought that Brian Fitzpatrick would come in and really help this team after what he did last year, and that is just blown up in their face. That is $12 million that I'm sure Mike Maccagnan wishes he would have spent elsewhere, but will probably tell you that gave us the best chance to win. And he's right. Ryan Fitzpatrick did give them the best chance to win, because who else were you going to go with? Geno Smith? You saw what, you've seen Geno Smith. You know what he's capable of. The only time he plays well is week 17 when the game doesn't matter and they're playing the Miami Dolphins, where he, you know, he has a perfect game the last game of the season, but in week 8 when it matters and you still have a chance, he does nothing. Bryce Petty. He should be starting this game because the Jets are 3-8. They are not making the playoffs. What do you have to lose? This should be Bryce Petty's chance to prove to Jet management that I am the guy that can lead this team going forward. We all know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is not going to be a Jet quarterback next year. This was a 1-year gamble, risk on himself, and it did not work for him. He's tied for the league lead in interceptions coming into this week with Brock Osweiler, the $72 million man. And things just kind of spiraled out of control. So Bryce Petty should be starting this game. He's not. It will be Ryan Fitzpatrick under center for the New York Jets. And they're just trying to get a win because this game is at home. And if things get out of hand early, you know that it's going to be one of two things. It is either going to be dead silent or they are going to be booing so loud that you're going to wonder who's actually on the field at that point. You know, you're going to be wondering, are they booing the culture doing well, or are they booing their own team for doing that badly? If you remember a few years ago when Tim Tebow was on the Jets, and every time Mark Sanchez threw an incomplete pass, even if it wasn't his fault, and his wide receiver dropped it, you heard those chants, Tebow, Tebow, Tebow. Now, when Ryan Fitzpatrick does it, you're just going to hear, we want Petty. Or maybe you hear that really low hum in the background where they say, we want Hackenberg. And you have to wonder, why haven't they given Hackenberg a shot yet? Maybe it's time. You use the second round pick on him, and Chan Gailey came out this week and said, the sky's the limit for this kid. Well then, if the sky's the limit for the kid, put him in there. Let's see what he's got. You won't know what you have until you put it out there. The worst that can happen in a lost season like this is that they keep losing. And what works out well for that is that they get a higher draft pick. And the Jets need a few of those. Because even though they don't know how to draft in the first round, as ESPN likes to always make fun of every year at the draft, and it just makes me sick every year watching that, because you watch them make all those draft picks, especially the ones where you hear Pete Rozelle going, Roger Vick! And you wonder, like, how can they possibly keep screwing this up? But there's a lot of good talent coming out in the draft this year. So getting that high draft pick would be big. And they need to draft big. And I'm not talking defensive lineman or linebacker. I'm talking offensive lineman. That offensive line got old really quickly. With the Brickshaw Ferguson leaving, Nick Mangold getting hurt, and that guy never got hurt. So he's missed a few games this year. So you're seeing him start to break down. Ryan Clady's 31 will probably not be back next year. Breno Giacomini has just not been what the Jets expected. So you're looking at a team that is in desperate need of rebuilding an offensive line that is in shambles. And you watch other teams that have built offensive lines over the last few years. You look at the Dallas Cowboys with drafting guys like Zach Martin and Tyron Smith. And now you took a rookie in Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, where you would have thought there was some growing pains. No, they're 11-1. So it took a couple years for that to really pay off with their offensive line, as they had to build it up and wait for Tony Romo to get hurt. But now the Cowboys are one of the best teams in the NFL. The Oakland Raiders, they signed a couple big free agents this year, drafted their own, and funny enough, they call their offensive line car insurance, which is a great nickname. I just have to say it. I love it. And they're now 10-2. So an offensive line is a great foundation to start a team. And then if you get that quarterback who can be that guy and you can protect him, good things can and will happen. I've been saying it for 5 years now that they need to draft the offensive line, and I stand by it, and I will continue to do so. No more of this drafting defensive guys. You have enough of them. Your defense, your front seven is still one of the better defensive fronts in football, no matter what their secondary is doing to them. They need to draft the other side of the ball. And because they don't have an offensive-minded coach, they don't get that right now. But maybe I'm going a little bit further ahead of myself than I should be and focusing, maybe I should just focus more on tomorrow night, because that's what's in front of them right now, is the Indianapolis Colts, who have offensive line issues of their own. So the Jets defense can feast on a returning from concussion Andrew Luck, because when you have guys like Mo Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson going up against a bad offensive unit, Andrew Luck's going to have no time to throw. And he might have T.Y. Hilton back. He might have Dante Moncrief in there. But it won't matter if he's lying flat on his back in 2.1 seconds. And he's going to have to be like Eli Manning and get rid of the ball in a second and a half. Otherwise, he's never going to find somebody open. He's not going to have enough time to do so. That's just the nature of the beast, that playing with a bad offensive line, you're going to have to get rid of the ball quick. If you can't make it work, then find another profession or beg your GM to bring you in some players who are going to help you. Looking at the Jets, they've had their own offensive problems. They've been relying too much on the pass and abandoning the run game way too early in games. So Matt Forte not being really used to his full potential. But that has seen the emergence of guys like Quincy Enunwa, who's had a really excellent season, getting over 600 yards in receiving yards this year, has 4 touchdowns. And you have guys like Robbie Anderson, who you never heard of the guy prior to this season. And he's had a nice season as an extra wide receiver in the absence of Eric Decker. But going back to Matt Forte for a second, he's averaging less than 4 yards a carry and has less than 800 yards rushing this season, which is really not what you want a guy who you signed for 4 years to be doing. You don't want him to be making sure, you want to make sure that he's in the game and making the plays happen. So he does have 7 touchdowns this year, but they got to find a way to let him loose. And if they're not going to let him loose, then what was the point of signing him? You basically just took about $12 million and flushed it down the toilet. Cause you have a good foundation there with a running game that, even though he is 30, he can move the ball down the field. And it's just not happening for them this year. Phone lines are open at 631-888-8811. So if you want to call and get involved, there's the number. Always looking forward to your calls. Love getting to talk to some of the people that are out there listening. And please join in. Going back for the Colts for a second, they need to get something moving with their defense. Their defense is playing better, and they could really get themselves a good confidence boost against a Jets team that really is one dimensional. That they rely on the pass far too often, especially in the red zone, where once they get inside the 20, you might as well pretend that Matt Forte and Bilal Powell don't exist. Because once they get down there, they don't. You know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is looking for Brandon Marshall in the corner of the end zone, and that's the play. So you could double cover Brandon Marshall all day long when the Jets get down inside the 20, because you know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is going there. And you don't have to worry about a tight end, because the Jets haven't known what a tight end is since 2009, when Dustin Keller was on the team. This year, Jet tight ends, I think, have 6 receptions on the season. 6. We just spoke about Dennis Pitta earlier today. He had 9. He had more receptions in 1 game than every Jet tight end has had this season and all of last season, where the Jet tight ends had 8 catches all year. So you're talking 14 receptions in almost two full seasons. How is that acceptable in any professional level? That just doesn't make sense, that a team can have players who just don't have any role on this team yet show up on the field every play. And are they using them as decoys, or are they strictly using them to block? And if they are, they're not doing a very good job at that either, because you saw the game last week against New England that Ryan Fitzpatrick gets stripped from behind by Chris Long, and that ended that game. But even still, if you're gonna play tight end, and we see every other team in the league does, and they use them all their advantage, because you can use these guys over the middle, knowing that they're gonna be being played by safeties or linebackers who are not quick enough to catch these guys, because most of these tight ends are wide receivers who are 6'6", 260, that can also be used to block, but they are for the most part pass catching wide receivers that are being put on the offensive line. And that's a great position to play. Now, if you're looking at some of the guys who are making a lot of money now, like your Rob Gronkowski's, your Martellus Bennett's, all these guys are playing on the offensive line and breaking off the offensive line, making catches in the middle of the field that nobody can stop them. And that's what the Jets need right now. In addition to rebuilding their offensive line, they need a pass-catching tight end who can help them. And maybe they can learn from watching this guy, whoever it may be, that's catching passes for them off the offensive line. Maybe they can learn how to cover one too by watching how this guy runs, because the Jets also haven't been able to cover a tight end in decades. You watch guys like Rob Gronkowski and Jordan Cameron just torch them up and down the field all day long, and it's like the same story every day, every year. And you wonder, when is it gonna end? Well, a lot of Jet fans are getting pretty old. They want to see them win a Super Bowl. And they want to see them win a Super Bowl before they die. At the rate the Jets are going right now, I don't know if that's gonna happen. Moving on to another sport, one that might make some people a lot happier on today's date, especially after the Giants lost today and the Jets very well might lose tomorrow. Hopefully they don't, but I digress. Moving on to baseball, the Yankees made a move today and signed Matt Holliday for 1 year, $13 million. On the surface, it's a good deal. You know, you only have him for 1 year, and he's gonna be their primary DH. And he's gonna come in and he's gonna provide that veteran leadership and a lineup that really kind of needs it after you saw the departure of stars such as Carlos Beltran, who they weren't able to re-sign this year after trading him. They were active players in getting him, but he went and signed with Houston yesterday. They traded Brian McCann, and now you look at some of these guys who are playing, who are still in free agency, like Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista. Those guys were going to cost way too much money, and you get a guy at an affordable contract like Matt Holliday, who's played in both the American and National League, has had success in both. He's got a .303 lifetime batting average, 295 career home runs, including 20 last year with 62 RBIs. He only hit .246, played in 110 games, had 382 at bats for the St. Louis Cardinals last year. But he's now coming back to the American League, where he played with Oakland for about a half a season in 2009. Before getting traded to St. Louis. So he's gonna be the primary DH for this Yankee team that's got a good young core with guys like Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and Tyler Austin and now the return of Greg Bird. And that's what you want to see from the Yankees, that they're committed to getting younger, but also know that they can't just play rookies all year long. They will have to have some veterans out there. As we're getting closer to winter meetings, we could see a few more trades. Like, we know, it's been really well known that the White Sox are looking to trade Chris Sale. Yankees need a starting pitcher. They may be players for him, but they know that they are going to have to give up a King's ransom to get arguably the second best left-handed pitcher in baseball behind Clayton Kershaw. And those trade talks are going to start at minimum with one of the two, either Aaron Judge or Gary Sanchez. Now, are the Yankees going to be willing to part with either one of them? My guess would be no, but then again, if Brian Cashman gets the approval from the Steinbrenners, he might. We saw last year that they weren't, that they wound up being sellers, and they got guys like Gleyber Torres and Clint Frazier and Justice Sheffield in trading away stars such as Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman and Carlos Beltran, and they rebuilt that farm system. Now the Yankees farm system is arguably one of the best in the major leagues. And though some of these guys are a couple years away, the Yankees have a very, very bright future ahead of them where they can continue that success that they had in the late 90s and the early 2000s. Now with the new CBA being signed earlier this week, it was agreed on. You're now looking at a team that's in prime position to get themselves going for a prime run at a long, sustained period of success, much like the Cubs are priming themselves for after winning the World Series. They've got the talent, they've got the farm system, and you know they got the checkbook. So you look ahead at this team coming out ahead with getting a player like Matt Holliday to fill this role. They're priming themselves to hope to try to make themselves contenders in 2017 and beyond. Looking at other teams, you look at the Mets. They signed Yoenis Cespedes this week. And for 4 years, $110 million, that was a signing that they needed to make. And ever since they acquired him back in 2015, he's done nothing but light up the scoreboard for that team, light up Mets fans' eyes, and make that home run apple come up and up and up. So now you have him in that lineup, and he's going to stay here for another 4 years. The problem is that now they have to trade either Jay Bruce or Curtis Granderson. You can't have all three of them in the outfield, especially when you can't have Curtis Granderson playing center field every day. So you need a guy like Juan Lagares out there, and so that makes Jay Bruce or Curtis Granderson expendable because neither one of them can play center field every day. So one of them has to play right field, and you're not going to let someone who's making the kind of money that both of them are sit on the bench a few times a week. It's just not going to happen. That's one of those situations where I'm sure the Mets were wishing that there was a universal DH rule, because then they could have the ability to keep both of them and use one as a DH, one as the right fielder. All problems are solved. And they don't have to worry about their pitchers getting hurt while running the bases. Luckily for them, maybe unfortunately for them, they do have to worry about that problem, but at least their pitchers can hit, even though they let one of their best hitting pitchers go in Bartolo Colon. And you have to wonder what kind of reception he'll get when he pitches for the first time at Citi Field as a member of the Atlanta Braves. I would have to think it would be a pretty good reception. They'll make the video montage of him running around the bases against San Diego after he hit the home run, the flip play behind the back when he made that play off the mound, or any time he swung and missed and you watch his helmet fly off back into the dugout. It was just always fun to watch him play for the Mets, and you wish him the best of luck as he pitches for the Atlanta Braves. Speaking of the Atlanta Braves, John Schuerholz was inducted into the Hall of Fame today, or he was elected into the Hall of Fame today, along with Commissioner Emeritus and the former Commissioner of Baseball, Bud Selig, as part of the Today's Game Era Committee. So they will be inducted, along with the rest of the class of 2017, in July. So while the Baseball Writers Association has not yet announced the voting for the guys on the ballot, which will come out in mid-January, we already know the first two members of the 2017 Hall of Fame class will be John Schuerholz and Bud Selig. John Schuerholz is one of the architects of the Braves' National League dominant teams of the late pretty much the entire 90s, actually, and the first half of the 2000s, where he brought in guys like Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, and crafted arguably the greatest pitching staff of the last 20 years. Then you had guys like Chipper Jones and Andrew Jones come up through the system under Schuerholz's watch. Bobby Cox became a Hall of Fame manager. So that team is very grateful to everything that John Schuerholz did. and baseball itself is, you know, no matter what you think about Bud Selig, where you want to say he was instrumental in canceling the World Series in 1994, he was instrumental in steroids being overlooked for almost a decade, especially during the 1998 home run chase between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. But what he did for the game, he made it a truly international game. When you see all these players coming from Japan and wanting to come play in Major League Baseball, you see all these Cuban players that, you know, unfortunately had to defect from their homelands to come play in the United States. Bud Selig is responsible for a lot of that because he brought that game international appeal. The game of baseball and Major League Baseball as a whole is a multi-billion dollar industry. And when you see the TV contracts that are being signed by teams nowadays, and the teams have their own cable networks, and so 20 new ballparks established under Bud Selig's tenure, including here in New York, Citi Field and Yankee Stadium, both billion-dollar facilities. That goes to show you how important Bud Selig was to the game of baseball. So love him or hate him, he was integral in the major growth of baseball from being a more regional game to now being an international marketing superstar. You want to say he let there be a tie in the All-Star game and then made the All-Star game count for something that it shouldn't have? Yeah, he did that. But he brought that school, or he brought that, the whole organization, more money than they could have ever imagined. Like, could you imagine somebody telling you 25 years ago that a team would be worth $4.5 billion, like the New York Yankees are pretty close to being, especially with the YES Network and the stadium and all their holdings, that they are worth over $4 billion. If you would have told somebody that 25 years ago, they'd have said you were crazy. Or if you would have said that the Los Angeles Dodgers would be able to have a payroll of close to $250 million, somebody would have said that no team is going to spend that kind of money for a team. And at the time, they'd have been right. But now, that's the norm. You see teams that are routinely spending $200 million or more on salary. Do those teams always win? No. But having the best players does give you a better chance of winning. Look at the Chicago Cubs. They have arguably some of the best players in the game. You have one of the best third basemen in the game who still hasn't gotten paid yet. And once he gets paid, you know he'll be up in the Bryce Harper, Mike Trout category of money. Same with Anthony Rizzo. Same with Baez. You look at those guys who are young superstars that are being cultivated and that are going to eventually make bank. And that's a big thanks to Bud Selig. That contract rates years have exploded under his watch. And now you see Rob Manfred doing a lot of the similar things that Bud Selig did. And he was able to keep the labor peace after the strike. So there have now been 22 years of continued labor peace, which is one of the longest active streaks in the professional sports. Since the last baseball strike, there have been 3 lockouts in the NHL. There have been 2 lockouts in the NBA and 1 in the NFL. And while no games were missed in the NFL lockout, except maybe like a preseason game or two, that still goes to show you how important the Major League Commissioner has been to the game, that he's been able to keep, he and his successor have been able to keep labor peace for almost two and a half decades. And that's something that you really appreciate. You're not really appreciative at the time, but then when you realize it after the fact, you think, there hasn't been a work stoppage in baseball since the Clinton administration. That's pretty good. So those two will be the first two members of the 2017 Hall of Fame class, and we'll have the rest of the Hall of Fame class in January, where we see a lot of good players being eligible for the first time, including Vladimir Guerrero, Manny Ramirez, and you wonder how the voters are going to treat Manny Ramirez, because, you know, he was accused of PED use. He was suspended for it. But the guy still did have over 500 home runs and was one of the best pure hitters in the game for a decade and a half. Then you have guys on the ballot for some who've been on the ballot for a while, guys like Tim Raines and Jeff Bagwell, who have been on the ballot for quite a while. And you wonder, is this their year? And unfortunately, due to the fact that there are so many people that have been backlogged, guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, that sometimes these guys might get overlooked. Whether you believe they should be in the Hall of Fame or not is a matter of your own opinion. And while I do believe that Tim Raines and Jeff Bagwell are Hall of Famers, maybe it doesn't matter if not enough people at the Baseball Writers Association of America don't think like I do, because that's their opinion and they have the right to use it. We're about wrapping down the show. We got about 5 minutes left here. We're going to give you a quick update from Seattle. And right now we are probably at about halftime at this point. There's about 2 minutes left in the second quarter. It's 17-7 Seattle. And we'll see how they got those scores here. Ted Ginn Jr. had a pass from Cam Newton to make it 10-7. Thomas Rolls went roll for 45 yards to make it 17-7. And Stephen Hoskins kicked a 37-yard field goal to make it 20-7 with a minute 45 left in the second quarter. So while Cam Newton had come out briefly, he is now back in the game for Carolina. He's 6 of 11 for 93 yards with a touchdown. Jonathan Stewart has 6 carries for 11 yards, so he's averaging only 1.8 yards a carry. And last week, he put up 2 touchdowns. So if you're a Panther fan, you're hoping he can kind of repeat that. Giving you a little preview of the week here in New York, you got a few big events coming on in the metro area over the next few days. The Jimmy V Classic will be taking place at Madison Square Garden, and you can watch that on ESPN. There are going to be 4 teams that are going to be playing there on Tuesday night, and one of those games involves the number 15 Purdue Boilermakers taking on the Arizona State Sun Devils in what should be a pretty good game, because ASU has been playing better of late. You know, they beat UNLV the other day. Purdue's coming in as the 15th team in the nation. So you're looking at a good game there. You have, in addition to that, Florida and I think Duke are playing the other game. And that should also be a phenomenal game, as Duke is one of the top teams in the nation, just like they always are. Because Mike Krzyzewski is arguably the greatest coach in college basketball. So it is Florida and Duke. And Florida is, they put together a good team. And, you know, the bright lights of Madison Square Garden will always bring out the best in teams. And you see that when you watch the Knicks play and you see all these teams come out, and everybody likes playing at Madison Square Garden because it is the goal that everybody wants to see their name up in the lights at Madison Square Garden, and that's where they play their best. LeBron James loves playing at Madison Square Garden. He routinely will put up 30 points a night at the Garden, whether his team wins or not. Michael Jordan, you know he loved playing against the Knicks. Kobe Bryant put up some of his best games at Madison Square Garden. At, you will have Derek Lewis fighting against Shamil Abdurakhimov. And actually, we're having got an update here. Patrick Cummins is out of UFC Fight Night 102 due to a staph infection. So he will not be fighting Long Island Gian Vellante. We'll see who gets announced as the replacement for that. And hopefully it'll be a good fight card up there before they make their return to the metro area in February for UFC 208 at the Barclays Center in New York, in Brooklyn. That's gonna just about do it for us here. We got a couple minutes left to play with. So you're looking out at a fun week. Jets start out the week tomorrow with a Monday night clash against the Colts. You have the Jimmy V Classic at Madison Square Garden, The Rangers will have some games. The Islanders are going to have some games. So a lot of fun things that you can watch as we get in, as we get inch closer and closer to the winter. And everybody hates winter because that means snow and ice and we have to shovel out our cars. And that's all. We don't want to do that. That's just not fun to us. But that also means you get some of the best sporting events of the year. So at least you can, when you're done shoveling and you're sitting there and you're shaking because you've been out there in the snow too long, you can sit back and say, all right, well, you know, at least there's something good on TV to watch. Because, you know, after you're outside for an hour, you just don't want to do it anymore and you just want to sit and relax. But that's gonna about do it for us here. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Andy Sukoff, and hopefully this is the first of many shows here on Sports Talk 1240 WGBB. For Brian Graves in the studio, thank you again for listening, and have a good night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.